welcome to the after film discussion of Never Let Me Go at Minicine. Niamh from Lee's Book Club is here with us. Tell us about what your book club came out with after reading this, and have they seen the film?
Yeah, the vast majority of us have, because the book has been out for quite a while. In fact, I read it first in 2010 and did a review for it. And at the time, it's probably worth saying, I thought that it was, you know, an impossible fantasy. I'm actually far more inclined to think this is the future that we're heading towards now. For LBC Dystopia, which is a book club that specifically reads misery, we very recently, a couple of months back, we read, and for many of us it was a reread of Never Let Me Go, and we were partly looking at it to sort of expand the, because this is a, for me this is a very clear dystopia, but there are people for whom the definition is sometimes not as flexible as we like to make it. And the other reason that we wanted to watch it is because it was such a hype book and such a hype film when they came out. We wanted to see, after the test of time, how does it stand? And it was a really well-received book, given that it's very sparse and very minimalist in terms of the social context it provides for everything that we see. We had a really involved discussion, and we get stuck in, which for me is the mark of a good book.
Yeah.
And also, I would say, a good film.
Do you think that you could get stuck into the film then after you saw it?
Well, I'm one of the 10 people on the planet who adores Keira Knightley. Mm-hmm. I mean, not that she's pretending to be a bounty hunter, that's just inadvertently hilarious, but I genuinely think she's a really compelling actor. And I think I was defensive the first time that I saw the film. I was like, she's very good, actually. and now watching it this way, I mean, for however long that was on, just under 2 hours, I sat in complete silence. And this is a film I've seen 3 or 4 times already. You know, I'm sure that I'm coming across as really calm and measured, but I don't always portray that in my real life. And so to be absolutely just immersed in a film like that, for me, I think it's a really good sign.
Okay.
Especially if you come out of it and still have opinions and, you know, rather than was just dozing. What about you?
I thought it was amazing. I haven't read the book. Has anybody else in here read the book?
I think. My brain's like a sieve.
From what you can remember.
And I've read Remains of the Day, but I'm not sure if I've read Never Let Me Go. Anyway, I've seen the film before.
Yeah.
So I might just be remembering the film.
And you've seen it before.
I've seen it before, but I've not read the book. You're reading it right now.
I started reading it, but
you weren't quick enough.
You know,
four or five years, he'll come back to us with an
opinion. I'm terrible at reading. I'm in awe of people who can read a book in a day.
So, is it faithful to the book?
Well, I'm wearing a t-shirt on the book. I came with my battle colours on, and it's a book that declares I'm better than the movie. And in this specific instance, I think my t-shirt is right. I think the book is better than the film. But in general, I actually don't think there's a binary on how you tell stories. I think the fact that we're moving into a society where a book can become a film, a play, a radio play, an album, or a sculpture in the middle of a sheep field somewhere because that's what it inspired, I think that's a really brilliant, brilliant time. I really like the film, but whereas within the book there's a non-linear structure, I think the film removes a lot of the mystery or suspense by opening in the way that it does with Tommy on the table and Kathy looking. Whereas with the book, how will they come back together? Will they get, you know, be a part of one another's lives? That's what's keeping you reading. So for me, I think that I tend to tick that off as a weakness slightly, but I am aware that it's just a different difference in approach. There are some gaps that I find really significant. I was just joking when we were heading out for the coffee that it irritates me every time I watch it that the Irish couple just disappear.
Yeah.
Every time. I'm like, thank you for providing your useful rumour and speculation. Now go bugger off and be dead somewhere. You know, And I don't want to come across as the insensitive one when we're talking about harvesting human... But you know, you're kind of going, come on, dudes, that was... I find that to be lacking. I find the lack of any of the other characters from the school to come forward. I think it whereas the book is very contained, it's contained in a really specific way, whereas this just really has a very small palette of characters to choose from.
Do you find anything more about in the book about the people they are modelled on? Is that true? Are they modelled on what they deem to be the lower end of society or something like that?
Well, this is something that's really interesting because the book provides you with no social context. You have no idea about race, age. I mean, I know they all sound like the poshest of the posh here, but we don't actually know any of that. And that's brilliant because it allows you to believe in the central premise, which is that we're breeding children to tear them apart to extend our own lives. In the film, they provide a lot more external context, and I actually think it takes from the central premise because when you see how people are a little fearful of them or a little bit like, ugh, you're sat in our cafe and all the rest of it, it makes you wonder, how are they able to go out like free-range chicken and, you know, and that kind of thing. So I think that's probably the biggest weakness of the film, is that I can just buy into it in the book because all we're given is Kathy and Tommy and Ruth. Whereas in this, we are provided with a lot more. So you're kind of going, why are the hospital nurses not going, don't go talk to any of the other patients? And, you know, stuff like that. I really enjoyed the film, don't get me wrong. But those are the things that when I popped out, I was like, there are details that within the book are treated differently. And I think it just pips it to the post a little bit there.
Do you think... with book adaptations, and this is open to everybody, with book adaptations to film, that what is the job? 'Cause it can never be the book, obviously, because one, the most powerful thing is your own imagination when you're reading a book. And then there's also interpretation and everybody's is slightly different. Is it the job of the filmmaker to just think, this is a great story, it'll make a great film, let's take the core plot and the core emotions and put them on a screen? Or is it to replicate, or is it to kind of ask questions or gather a tone? What do you think first, and then we'll open it up.
I think that is that's the core of the either or argument. Mm-hmm. Are you looking, either the book or the film is telling the story best? Either the book or the film depicts the characters best, portrays the world and captures the tone. I think in this case, this was a book that really caught the filmmakers. I mean, from the casting, like little Kathy to was spot on. Those three little children were done so well. Charlotte Rampling, you know, the way they had her be that little bit more stylish so that when they aged her up at the end that it had impact and stuff like that. I thought that was like incredibly well done, and it's a labor of love. But they were satisfied to take the core themes and transfer them. They've made the necessary changes to make it flow.
Yeah.
You can be too faithful to a story.
Where then it staggers in the film version. Mm. Anybody else got examples of maybe adaptations that they've enjoyed or haven't enjoyed that you can think of?
I was gonna mention about like when you try to be too faithful to films, like I really enjoyed No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
But there is that point at the end where it worked quite well in the book, but in the film, if anyone, everybody's in No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
So there's the bit where the main character like just rocks up dead, which in the book kind of works, but then in the film it's almost like,
falls flat.
It kind of then pulls, it knocks the wind out of the sails of the film kind of thing, so like the last 20 minutes is just a bit flat really.
One of my go-tos is Watchmen.
I was just about to mention that as well.
Watchmen was awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
Oh, it's awful.
Oh, it's brilliant. Watching Queen of the
That
Damned.
Sex scene is one of the worst scenes I've ever seen in my life. I thought, I feel like
I'm a
14-year-old boy
to see Papa Smurf
watching.
Bang
it was
someone.
Horrid. It was horrid. I guess the comedy one's an interesting one.
Failing of the Watchmen because they were so, apart from some quite
the
large
ending
plot points towards the end,
changes hugely.
Was a massive change, but apart from that, they were incredibly faithful.
To merit or to detriment?
The detriment.
Yeah.
I think that was the big problem with the film, is that they tried to basically replicate what was in the graphic novel onto the screen, and what works in still images is ludicrous when translated to live actors.
Also, it's kind of just trying to balance everybody's pleasing everybody about it, because when a comic book is so big, particularly with comics adaptations, you kind of like, oh, there's this whole fan base that are like know these characters and stories inside out, probably have written their own fan fiction towards it, and therefore, well, let's be really faithful. Is that going to get us fans or is it not?
And then a film that I think does the opposite is Matilda. Like, I grew up with Roald Dahl's Matilda.
I love the film and the
She
book.
Is English to me. Yeah. Her family is English. The Wormwoods are an English family going through English stuff. And yet the film which translocates Matilda to an American setting, Danny DeVito becomes her father and so on. I think it's fantastic. Mm. And I think for an American film predominantly being released in America, it made more sense, but I would have been perfectly happy to have had it, you know, have it retain that, but it didn't lose anything in the telling of it.
Yeah, because I think the tone with Matilda is that you still, there is this, the British humour hasn't gone, or there's this kind of like, that darkness that Roald Dahl can often capture still is there, despite it meant to be in a family film, which can often get lost in translation, particularly with American interpretations, which I thought was interesting. Most recently, I thought Carol was incredible, and I read the book before I saw the film. And I felt everyone I spoke to that hadn't read the book but watched the film enjoyed it but didn't actually believe their chemistry very much, where I thought, oh my God, this is spot on. And it's conveying so much that they're internalising parts of the characters from the book that you would pick up on if you'd read it. And so who read the book thought it was great and very, very realistic, but also kind of looked at different things, and they changed a couple of character things that really fit it. Because in the book, Teresa's character is like a set designer. Well, she aspires to be a set designer for the stage. And in the film, she's an aspiring photographer, and this idea of photography and kind of focusing in on someone and infatuation and kind of spying and down a lens and not seeing anything else, kind of like falling in love. I thought that was really, really good.
It was a good change.
Yeah, it's a good change. Yeah, that you read the book as well and seen the film.
The book, really
and Highsmith as well. It's like, oh, you're going near Highsmith. Can you actually get her menace and her the, I don't know, this amazing writing, amazing characters. And I actually watched Talent Mr. Ripley again last night. And again, I haven't read Talent Mr. Ripley, but I still felt Highsmith's kind of tone. I think tone's a thing for me. If I get the tone, then I can be in it. And I think a good film adaptation from the book is it drives you back to the book, and the book drives you back to the film because you just kind of want to be in the world.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I think it's part of the inherent conversation. The order that you come to something shouldn't be as important as it is. Like, you should be able to pick up a book regardless of whether you've seen the film and have that be your favourite version regardless of which came first. But it really doesn't. I mean, I think one of my favourite films from, this was when my brother and dad went away and my mum and I had a girly weekend, and we opened with Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe, and it will forever be one of my favourite films. I think it's perfectly done. And then I read the book and I was totally torn by how much more vivid and real and three-dimensional the world was, and yet the book wasn't automatically my favourite. And so I was like, well, it's because I've seen it first and so on. And now I'm quite comfortable with going, they occupy very equal but different spheres, and I couldn't choose between the two of them now. But everyone I know that watches the film first, then reads the book, loves both. But if you read the book and then watch the film, you'll always, didn't quite. It's weird, but I think it plays a part, though.
There was a movie that I started watching, which was Perfume, Story of the
Yes.
I was kind of halfway through and kind of texting a friend, and he's like, oh, you have to stop watching it now. You have to stop watching it, read the book first, and then go back to it. So I've stopped watching it. But now the movie's no longer on. I think it was on BBC. Some kind of stuck, because...
You're in limbo.
Find out.
So you still haven't seen the rest of the film yet?
I mean, does it bother you that your friend is a bit of a snob?
That's what I was going to ask, actually, because is there a stigma? Like, there's this idea, like, oh, have you read the book, though? Because we can all watch a film in 2 hours.
Where when you read a book, you know, like you said, you have your own imagination.
Yeah.
You kind of fill it all in, and then you kind of see what somebody else does with it. So I, you know, if I wanted to watch the whole of the film, I would have just watched it. But I kind of thought, because I didn't realise there was a book, so I just want to go and see, because the film is very visual, you know, you've all kind of smelling part of it is made very visual. So
quite
it's kind of like I really just want to go and read what somebody writes around it.
Yeah.
And to be fair, when the book was released, it was called a book that was unfilmable because they said, how could you possibly depict his sensory exploration of the world on film? And it, you know, the, it did take some time, I think, before they went, this is the, I mean, Ben Whishaw, it was I think, read the book, watch the film.
Yeah,
you can do them all in whatever order you want.
Yeah.
My counterpoint to that, though, is always with something like, I think it's fine with literary books. People will go, oh no, you must read the book first. But can you imagine like doing a spot test before people were arriving to see Ant-Man? Going, have you read the 30 years of history in the comics? I'm sorry, sir, you can't take your 8-year-old in to see The Hobbit. He hasn't read it. And he's not familiar with the 13 hard form books of appendices that Tolkien released afterwards. This is just not going to work.
Where's
your
book receipt? We can't let you in.
I think it's just different experiences.
Exactly.
It's going to get. Life just happens and it happens.
Mm.
So same as, you know, whatever you come to first is what you come to first.
Mm.
There are some...
I was going to say, I kind of think the whole book versus film thing is almost a bit of a sort of false dichotomy, really, because it's they're two entirely separate mediums and they are for different purposes.
Mm.
Like, you know, the two aren't interchangeable. Yeah, they may be telling the same story, but you won't get the same experience. You know, even if it is like the most faithful adaptation possible, it's a very different experience watching a film to reading a book. And you know, sometimes you want to watch a film, sometimes you want to read a book, and they are totally different things.
Yeah, you'll get more enjoyment, I think, if you just accept that.
Yeah.
I remember with a little, I'm not extremely very well read, but I did read The Hunger Games.
Excellent.
And I saw the film before I read the book, and I didn't know anything about it, and I was working at a cinema at the time, and there was a staff show, and I thought, oh, what the heck is this? And I went to see it, and I thought, oh, you know, this is all right, it's aimed at teens, isn't it? And it's quite interesting, and it's quite sad. And then I was intrigued about the book, and I read the book, and I thought, oh, I can't wait to watch the film again, because I've read the book, and I think the book's actually quite good. And then I watched the film and I was like, this is shit. This is so shit. Like, they've cut out so much. And it's just really interesting to see how, like, because the film at first was my complete point of story. I didn't know anything. And it's, I'll also own up to Twilight. I'm not really a fan. I think they're actually terribly written books and awful ideas. But somebody wanted to write that, so there she goes. But I saw the first film, again, being completely ignorant to what the hell it was. I thought it was this little indie film about a vampire, and I had no idea what it was about. And I saw, like, the last showing, because it was, like, three people there. I'm like, this is just, like, a little indie film no one's come to see. And the director's Catherine Hardwick, and she's done, like, an independent film called 13. I thought, cool, cool. And actually,
oh,
the film's
Wood,
quite okay. Yeah. And then I thought, oh... and then I read the book and I thought, this is awful.
Diabolical.
This is awful. And then I thought, oh, this is interesting. So no, it's just like, I guess it's just interesting about fandom and how that plays in. No worries, thank you. Thank you.
I'm glad that you mentioned Twilight, because as much as I've come out and said, I don't think that, you know, you should necessarily look for one to be better than the other. I think that is one where the films are just staggeringly better than the books, except for the final film. And I have this thing that I did not do in 2015, and I'm going to try and not do it in 2016, but sometimes I can get a little bit tipsy. And I'll do a synopsis run-through of any Twilight film that you give me. And it is usually very entertaining, I have been told, if somewhat blue. But you work your way through the Twilight films and you can see the care that went into them, particularly with the second film when they decided they were going to tonally and visually change the Seattle. Like, it became a very sunshiny yellow place from the second film onwards, which you're like, is of course what I've heard Seattle is all about. And then by the last film, they have a CGI baby whose head moves independently to the face inside it.
It's bad.
You all must watch these films. This is like a camp classic. If you like Showgirls or Queen of the Damned or anything that where decent actors absolutely toss themselves over, then this is the film for you. It's amazing. That final one in particular. The end of the big battle in the book, like there's this huge political conversation. In the film, there's a dream sequence. Basically, they all like meet and go, ah, you're right, she's a cute baby, and they go home.
That is true.
So you're like, at least in the film, they had the dream sequence where you could pretend there was something like action. I'm getting caught up in the Twilight thing. We need to show
Has anyone got a book that they've read that they kind of think they'd like it to be a film or can imagine it as a film? Because I feel like when you read a book, it's almost like a film playing out in your head a little bit. Does anyone like kind of like become the casting director of their book? Like, yeah, they can play that. Has anyone got one in mind? Are we all own it up that we don't have time to read?
one of my favourite books ever hasn't been made into a film. And I'm a big film book, so I guess, when I read a book, I'll see if the author's been kind of adapted.
The book's
called Island People.
Oh, Island People, yeah.
Yeah, by Coleman Dowell. It's quite kind of the experimental novel, but it's kind of a ghost story. Mm. I think it would make a good film.
Do you feel precious about the book, though? Do you think?
No, I'm all for adaptations.
Yeah.
I kind of see them as like conversations, you know.
Yeah.
Ways of like kind of looking at other artworks and kind of like collaborating, I guess. I like adaptations of books that.
Definitely.
I'm the opposite. I tend not to read something and think this should be a film. Mm. But if I watch a bad adaptation of something, then it's almost like I demand they redo that.
Yeah.
like at this point, I feel like generationally, we're done with Pride and Prejudice now. Aside from the fact that our generation, you and I, and certain other ladies in the room, I would say, it's done. It was Colin Firth in 1995 on the BBC Pride and Prejudice. They can leave it for 20 years now. What we don't need to do is see stumbly, kiss-involving American films, which don't, I think, inherently understand the story. While there are aspects of that film I really enjoy, I just think it wasn't quite spot on. I enjoy playing with the medium and having something like Pride and Prejudice, set in a more Bollywood environment.
Yeah.
But I have to admit there's a slight, purist element in me that's a bit more like, no, we should find a story set in your part of the world and make that as prominent over here rather than necessarily have to transplant everything. I mean, this is just one specific example, because now there's Pride and Prejudice with zombies. And I just, I feel like this is really what Jane Austen intended for her novel characters to do. She wrote like 7 other novels. We could try and actually they have, haven't they? Is it Sense and Sensibility and
they're going for the
Sea Serpents or something? I mean, because the Dashwoods were totally about to be invaded by sea serpents. I maybe need to reread that book.
I think have we run out of stories? That seems to be why. Like there's an adaptation without fail at all times. And things like, not even just, maybe they won't do directly adapt from the book, but they'll kind of use that character as a trope. So Mr. Darcy, for example, there'll be characters that exist that are really kind of internalised or very overt about the fact that they are that character. And they rely on us knowing this. And I just think that's quite interesting. I read a stat the other day that like for the past 10, well about since 2008, most of the films, at least over half the films in general release at the box office are either remakes or adaptations.
Yeah.
So that's for like over...
Or sequels or remakes.
Sequels or remakes adaptations rather than any original stories, and I found that interesting.
I mean, I think it's lazy rather than a lack of storytelling.
Yeah, that's it.
I think your season, the Human Nature season, the three films that you've got set out there, show that even when you take the kernel of a much older story, the technological world that we live in, Black Mirror by Charlie Brooker, and that was on telly a few years ago, I think it's just showing that the way we are thinking about stories is perhaps not yet, we're maybe holding ourselves back a little bit, that the world around us is, there are so many, I think one of the best films of the last couple of years in terms of breaking away from that mold was Captain Phillips. Aside from, there's a white man hero thing that we're not getting into right now, but it's telling stories from other parts of the world. It's telling, I know the main character wasn't from there and all the rest of it, but I think there's more of a movement towards recognizing that there are stories that have never been told, and then it's the fear factor that gets studios to go back to making
Absolutely.
The same thing over. You and I think, and Woody, before we had a chat about independent cinema, and just how much more brave from dialogue and characters, like how much more realistic it is. And I think that's where the disconnect is more than the stories.
Actually, it's interesting because The Guardian had an article out like a week or two ago, which was talking about how, is the British public sick of foreign language cinema because it's just basically not being seen in cinemas.
I'm like, is it ever on?
No, that's it. It's just the fact that I think it's production companies, distributors, exhibition chains, the big ones, they just, they want to make the quick dollar.
And we're totally fearful as well. So if you make Delicatessen, then we'll allow you Emily, and then you'll get Micmacs, and so on. But if you, it's almost that thing where you have to have experience for every job before you can go for it, but you can't get a job to give you experience.
Yeah.
It's like, I think there's that cyclical.
But that's it, you look at any of the filmmakers that have made a superhero film, like any of the Marvel ones, they've got to the point now where it's just kind of, because they're all origin stories, effectively, Or they just basically, the next Captain America film is basically a sequel to Avengers, They just follow on, but they've just got a different title.
Oh my God.
But if you look at all the...
The Fantastic Four and Spider-Man that come out brand new with a new origin story every 5 years.
Yes,
I may.
But if you look at the directors and the filmmakers, if you look at their earlier work, they've actually done some quite interesting and exciting stuff.
Sorry, the only example I can think of is...
But they're all independent kind of stuff.
And some of the actors as well, wonder, if they weren't tied into these studio contracts to do five superhero films, think of the other film that they could do, Chris Hemsworth was in the racing film.
Oh,
Rush.
Yeah. And that was a really good film.
It to be freed up, don't you? Andrew Garfield, he's in this, but then he was Spider-Man.
And do you think that he would have been given four independent films except that he had done Spider-Man? We might be getting half the output, but it might be twice as much quality, and the only reason that that's happening is because of visibility.
There is obviously a desire from the actors, though, to do more. The fact that, our next film...
Speaking of!
Which has obviously got Scarlett Johansson in a film that you would, in a role that you would never associate Scarlett Johansson with. When you think of, how she's kind of portrayed as, the quintessential, Hollywood actress at the moment.
I remember Ghost World.
I would associate it with the character. I think they've picked Scarlett Johansson because she alludes a seductivity and this kind of temptress in so many different ways. I feel like they use it in a really interesting way.
There's independent cinema and then there's kind of...
Yeah, the different ways of representing
just
that.
Just filming someone on the slide while they're... rising around Glasgow.
There's also that kind of candid camera element under the skin, which I think that might have been a reason behind the casting. It's kind of, see how the public,
because they are the public, aren't they?
Hollywood
they
actors.
Didn't know they would be filmed until they got told after, and they got to.
That's a pretty interesting application as well.
I think it's completely, tonally different. And yet, I think it works.
Because it misses out so much, but maybe that to its merit though.
Yeah, it focuses on a different.
It becomes its own
angle.
Film.
Yeah.
Then. It's like The American Office becomes its own sitcom.
I couldn't sit through the English
so
the American one didn't stand a chance.
I bet I shouldn't have said that. We've kind of got to wrap up now.
And then we killed each other, and it was all war and terror and hate.
But thank you very much for joining us, Niamh.
Thank you so much for having us.
How can people get in touch with you if they want to come to a book club or listen to your podcast?
If people want to come along to a book club, they'll find a calendar and our venues and dates and stuff at leedsbookclub.com, and you can also drop me a tweet at Leeds Book Club, and the podcasts are available on iTunes or via Twitter or the blog. I'm a giant promo queen. It's splattered all over the place.
You are good. I wish we had as much clarity.
You have me now. You're so good. And Woody's excellent also.
Yes.
Yes. That's
remember
very,
that point.
Very good.
Award winning.
award-winning.
I'm so modest.
We look in the mirror every day and I say, award.
I look in the mirror every day and go, thank you for not cracking.
Thank you very much for joining us, and I hope that you can come to Under the Skin, which will be here on the 19th of March. We usually screen at Allen Mills Industrial Museum, but it's been affected by this pesky floods, so we don't know when we'll be back there. But thank you very much, and have a good evening, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you,
Niamh.